Today's episode of Locked On Eagles is brought to you by the Peacock and Williamson podcast. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host Locked On's Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all across the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight on every game, team, and move around the league. Get your picks, previews, and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
You are Locked On Eagles, your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome in, everybody, to another edition of the Locked On Eagles podcast. It's your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast. It's episode number 5 this week of 5, downloaded into your phone. When you subscribe to the show, wherever you get your podcasts, it can be Google, it can be Spotify, Stitcher, Odyssey, Apple, you name it, we are available. And then we're always talking birds as well on Twitter after the show at Locked On Birds, at DBLCLOE. My co-host Gino Camilleri, he's on Twitter at GC24_football. Today is a fun show because today started off Eagles rookie minicamp, and it was awesome to see the media finally on the sidelines and getting to see the play-by-play and Nick Sirianni making his debut as the head coach, Devontae Smith hitting the field in that sharp number 6 as receivers can now wear single digits, and the numbers rule has changed now, so Kenneth Gainwell, the rookie running back out of Memphis, is rocking number 14. Landon Dickerson, don't love the number 51, but it was exciting to see potentially a new core in the start of a new era of Philadelphia Eagles football. Start today with Nick Sirianni out there, Devontae Smith, Landon Dickerson, Kenneth Gainwell. That's potentially your new Darren Sproles, your new Jason Kelce, your new, I don't know if the Eagles have ever had a guy as talented as Devontae Smith, that true of a number one wide receiver. Because even when you look back at DeSean Jackson and Jeremy Maclin, like, they were great for the roles they played, but were they ever true number one receivers? I guess you could say D-Jax was for a couple years there, but he was never like the true X number one receiver. Jeremy Maclin was solid, but was he ever a top tier number one receiver? I would say in 2014 he was, but outside of that, no. Like, Devontae Smith is a special, rare breed, and they honestly haven't had a guy this complete, I think, since Terrell Owens in 2004. So you got him out there, Kenneth Gainwell, Landon Dickerson, and then Nick Sirianni. Exciting to see him as the new head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles. And I'm going to get into, so today's show, in segment 2 and 3, we're going to get into a mailbag. We haven't done a mailbag episode in a while, so I want to hear from you guys, the listeners, and you can always, again, hit us up on Twitter and get your questions in, even after the show. If you guys have a question and I don't answer it on the podcast, I'll definitely get to it on Twitter. Again, my personal account is at DBLCLOE, and our show page is at Locked On Birds. And if you want to ask Gino, it's at GC24_football. So today is a mailbag edition of the show as we wrap up the week. But before we get into that, in segment 1, I want to talk about Nick Sirianni, and I want to talk about his press conference today and something he specifically said that he's been continuing to hammer home about his coaching philosophy. So let's play that clip real quick, and then I'll get into it coming up next.
Yeah, Jeff, I don't believe that that's good coaching when you just say, here's our offense and let's go. You learn it. You know, your talents are this and your talents are that, but here's what we run. That's just not good offensive football. Good offensive football is, and good defensive football and good special teams football for that matter, is adapting to the players that you have and playing to their strengths. So, of course, Jalen has strong qualities of being able to extend plays and move around and extend plays. So, we're definitely looking at those things and doing those things. We've all had a very extensive amount of time with quarterbacks that are mobile, and that's the same thing for Miles, right? Miles, what does he fit? Again, these are things that when we get on the field with them, we'll figure out a little bit more. That's still to be determined of, what everybody's skill set is, but we are putting in an extensive amount of offense, and Coach Steichen has done a great job, and the offensive coaches of really relaying the message to the players and installing it, and the players have done a great job learning it.
Yeah, so I absolutely love what Sirianni just said. Like, the biggest takeaway for me of the day is that I hope Sirianni continues to talk and then eventually puts it into practice, this whole philosophy about molding his offense and his team philosophically. It's not even just about on the field, it's about the culture too in the locker room, molding that to the strengths of his personnel, both on the field stylistically and also the character in the locker room, the different personalities, right? I love that talk about not forcing a square peg into a round hole. And he's talked about that over and over again since the Eagles have hired him in the spring. So I absolutely love hearing that consistently as the main focal point of his philosophy, right? We know how much Sirianni looks forward to player development, right? And especially at the wide receiver position, the cornerback position, two positions that he played at the collegiate level and at high school, that he's coached as well with the Chargers and with the Colts, as well as quarterback. And honestly, those are the three positions that I'm most enamored with this organization, because it has, I think, some of the most importance in the NFL with being such a pass-heavy league. You got to have quarterback right. Obviously, in the trenches is what's key, but you got to have quarterback right, receiver, and corner. And the fact that Sirianni comes from that background is awesome. But again, it's just a philosophical discussion of molding his offense and his scheme and his team culture as well around his personnel that he has, rather than a Chip Kelly, right, that comes in and says, this is what we're going to do. This is my offense. This is my locker room. You guys are going to have to conform to that, and it's my way or the highway. So if you, DeSean Jackson, LeSean McCoy, Jeremy Maclin, you don't fit into that picture, if you don't conform to that, then it doesn't matter if you have 1,300 receiving yards, it doesn't matter if you're the best running back in football, a complete weapon in the backfield, you're going to be gone. So I really did appreciate Nick Sirianni today in talking about that. Obviously, he's got to put it into practice, and he still needs to be a good coach, and there's got to be a result, but he does remind me a lot of Doug Peterson in that way when it comes to the molding your philosophy around your roster rather than vice versa. I think that was a huge positive trait in Doug Peterson that helped the Eagles win a Super Bowl in 2017. And I have two specific examples from 2017 that this philosophy helped the Eagles win their first ever ring. Doug Peterson, when Carson Wentz went down, at first, he kind of stuck with the offense as, you know, status quo, right? And you saw Nick Foles really struggling against the, I know he threw for four touchdowns, but he didn't really look that sharp against the Giants. He was terrible against the Raiders. Even that game he came in for Wentz against the Rams, like, he made that huge play to Nelson Aguilar on third down, but he didn't really do much in that game. He was really bad on Christmas Eve against the Raiders, against the Cowboys as well. For those first couple drives, you're like, remember we were talking about Nate Sudfeld maybe starting against the Atlanta Falcons in the divisional round of the playoffs when the Eagles had home field advantage. And then suddenly Doug Peterson removes his ego and says, not that he had one to start and that he was sticking to it, but a lot of coaches wouldn't do what Doug Peterson did. They said, we're going to scrap what we have done on offense that got us to an 11-2 record, a 13-3 home field advantage type of number one seed in the NFC. He still, considering how good they were, said, nope, it's a different player. He's struggling. Let's build a whole new offense around Nick Foles. And you got to give credit as well to Frank Reich and John DeFilippo and Mike Groh and that entire coaching staff. They put that to the side and they molded their scheme around the strengths of Nick Foles. And what did they do? They went back to the former head coach, Chip Kelly, what he did for Nick Foles in 2013 that helped Foles have 27 touchdowns and two picks. And then what did Nick Foles do? He had two of the best games in NFL history in the playoffs against the Minnesota Vikings and the New England Patriots in the NFC title in the Super Bowl. And then the other thing he did that year as well, molding his offense around the strengths of his personnel, was moving Nelson Aguilar in the slot, because that's what fit his strengths at the time. Even though a lot of coaches, a lot of teams said, hey, would have said, we drafted Nelson Aguilar in 2015 to be our true wide receiver one, and so he's going to play that. And if he fails, he fails. But that's what we drafted him to be, and we're not going to admit our failure by putting him in the slot, admitting that he's a wide receiver two or a wide receiver three. But for Doug Peterson and that team, the reputation did not matter. Where his players will thrive versus where they will struggle the most, that is what mattered. And what did Nelson Agholor do that year? He was one of the most explosive players in football inside, one of the best deep threats in football. And then in the biggest game in franchise history against the Patriots in Super Bowl 52, the guy caught 9 passes. So that's what was huge with Doug Peterson's philosophy. It's what's huge with Nick Sirianni. Just don't be close-minded when it comes to how you want to coach, when it comes to how you want to play. It's just something in life in general that I really took to heart with Doug Peterson and now with Nick Sirianni. Just because you draft Devontae Smith to be the X receiver doesn't mean he should have to be used in that spot 24/7. That doesn't mean you can't use him at the Z spot or the Y where he's going to get better looks. Just because he can win off press coverage consistently as the X doesn't mean you want him to have to do that all the time. Again, it's just that whole open-mindedness thing that I think two guys in the last decade, just in the last 6 years, never really got. And it was part of their downfall. Chip Kelly and Jim Schwartz, they just, again, tried to fit square pegs into round holes. You look at Rasul Douglas. How many times Jim Schwartz at cornerback had Rasul Douglas against a guy like Amari Cooper in close man coverage, but he couldn't get his hands on him, right? They weren't letting Rasul jam at the line, press coverage, and there was no safety help over top. So Rasul Douglas, who's a stiffer, lengthier, bigger corner, gets opened up, twisted like a pretzel against one of the best route runners in football, and Jim Schwartz never adjusted his scheme. It was the way it was going to be, and it didn't matter if you were Ronald Darby and you were 5'10", and you ran a 4'4", or Rasul Douglas and you were, I don't know how tall he was, what, 6'1", 6'2", and you ran a 4'6", and you had no quick, you know, short area explosiveness and quick twitch of the hips, it didn't matter. You both were going to do the same thing. And that was a huge issue I had with Jim Schwartz. And it was the same thing with Chip Kelly, right? Sam Bradford and DeMarco Murray, didn't matter that they were our quarterback and running back in a spread offense. They're going to fit in there. College pass attack, that was fast paced. And what happened? It was a disaster. Or you even look back on defense those years with Chip Kelly and Billy Davis, Brandon Graham and Vinnie Curry, these traditional 4-3 defensive ends that have their hand in the dirt that are going to go get the quarterback every play, they're playing 3-4 outside linebacker, and a lot of the time they're dropping back in coverage. Like, it just, again, it was Billy Davis coming in saying, we're a 3-4 defense, and it didn't matter if our personnel fit a 4-3, you know, it's going to be the way it is with our defense. Brandon Graham's going to drop back in coverage. Or Eric Rowe, right? They draft Eric Rowe in the second round. He was probably better as a safety than a corner at Utah. And then he comes in, the Eagles force him to play corner, he sucked, and then he goes to Miami, where now he's been a starter for years now at the safety position. And although you could, you know, you could have a set philosophy on offense and defense, and you could draft through that lens, that microscope, the problem with that, too, is I guess that's better than just, like, forcing, like, if you want to be a 3-4 and you want your outside linebacker to both rush the passer and drop back in coverage, yeah, you can draft somebody that does that instead of Brandon Graham, but if you have that kind of one-track mind, that tunnel vision, you're going to miss out on a lot of great players on defense and offense as well. So that's another reason I like the open-mindedness and just, we're going to take the best player and what they do best, we're going to mold across that. That spectrum is what I really, really like in a coach, a general manager, just in roster building entirely. And so I'm really, really excited about Nick Sirianni coming in and being very much like Doug Peterson in that way and Andy Reid, who are the two, to me, best coaches in Eagles history. Nick Sirianni has those traits that I really like, and he kind of showed that today. All right, guys, let's get into a mailbag coming up next. This is Locked on Eagles, and today's show is sponsored by BetOnline.ag. Guys, BetOnline is the fastest and the easiest way to bet on all your sports action. Baseball season is in full swing, and you can track all the action at BetOnline, as is the NBA and the NHL. They are in the thick of a playoff hunt. The playoffs are coming up right around the corner in hockey and basketball. You can also get all your UFC and MMA action at BetOnline.ag. Get all the latest news, odds, and info. Don't sit at the sidelines anymore, as this is your chance to get into the game as teams prepare for their run to the playoffs. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today. And when you use the promo code LOCKEDON, that's LOCKEDON, you're going to receive your 50% off welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. All right, Eagles fans, welcome back into this Friday edition of your daily Philadelphia Eagles podcast, Locked on Eagles. It's time now to hear from you, the listeners. It's time for a mailbag episode of the show. And again, if you didn't get your question in today, you can still ask some questions. I'll get to them on Twitter, at DiBiaseLOE, at Locked on Birds. Let's start with two questions in segment two. We'll get into two as well in segment three. And we're going to start with my boy, Tony B, out in Scotland. Tony asks, scenario for you guys to handle. Jalen Hurts is having a decent season. Interesting word there. Keyword decent, I think, is going to come up here in this equation. But we are losing most weeks because of a poor secondary and a roster that is simply too young to compete. Deshaun Watson comes through his troubles, and the Houston Texans call with a trade offer. Our potential three first-round picks in 2022 for Deshaun Watson. Are you trading? Discuss. And so decent season is the key word there. I'm not comfortable, unlike other media platforms, I am not yet comfortable commenting about Deshaun Watson yet. I think there is just way too many issues still with that case, in that I think it's inappropriate to talk about how good he would be with the Eagles or, you know, what, because he is one of the best quarterbacks in football, but it's just not appropriate to discuss that scenario and what it would take to get him, even though I do think the Eagles would be interested in Watson and apparently are. I think they would do it for those three first-round picks, but I'm not comfortable personally discussing yet if I'd want Watson on this team and in the details of a trade scenario like that. But again, back to the Jalen Hurts part of this, Tony, I think is key. When you said decent season, that's not good enough for me. If he doesn't have a good to great season, like decent is just, it's not enough. If he's decent, it doesn't matter the wins or losses. It doesn't matter if you win 10 or 11 games. If I think he looks like Alex Smith or Tyrod Taylor, I'm going for another quarterback. If he shows me real signs of being a franchise quarterback, like in 2016 with Carson Wentz, and yeah, you go 7-10 or you only win 4-6 games, then it doesn't matter. You have to contextualize the wins and losses. If he still shows me some wild performances where they're, you know, like the game last year against the Arizona Cardinals, if you're losing games 35-32 against Patrick Mahomes and Tom Brady and Justin Herbert, Dak Prescott, all these incredible offenses the Eagles have to play, then keep it going. Then run it back with Jalen Hurts in 2022, build around him through the 2022 draft. But if he's showing me this inconsistency again in this capped ceiling when it comes to his ability as a passer, then odds are I'm going to go for a veteran that I can trade for next year with all those picks. Or I'm going to try to trade up, if I'm not picking that high already, for a prospect in 2022, like Malik Willis of Liberty, you know, or Spencer Rattler out of Oklahoma. I'm not sure how well I like the prospects yet in that scenario, but I'm just saying, if he's decent, if we're using the word that Tony runs with here, decent, that's not good enough. If he is what he was in those four games last year, and it's just very up and down, I would rather give somebody else a chance, honestly. Again, though, contextualize everything. Context within the wins and losses is key. So I'm glad Tony kind of did that himself in this question, saying Hurts' individual performance versus why they're losing. Because wins is a team stat, and so you have to zoom in. But if he has a decent season and they win, it doesn't matter how many wins at that point, then it's not good enough for me. So that was a great question, Tony, and I really do appreciate that. Yeah, I'm not saying he has to be great this year, but he has to show signs of greatness. He's got to have some great performances. And so that's what I would say. And it's got to be more than one or two. It's got to be at least half. That's what I would say. So it's an interesting question, Tony. Thank you so much for the question on today's mailbag edition of Locked on Eagles. Let's get into another question from Lars Lewis. He wanted to get in on the conversation today. Lars asks on Twitter, what former Eagles coach shares the closest journey to Nick Sirianni in his ascension to the job as head coach of the Philadelphia Eagles? I really like that. We were just kind of talking about that in segment one, right, with Nick Sirianni and his style of coaching on the field and off the field, and how it resembles the two guys that I think he's followed the similar path with, Andy Reid and Doug Peterson, in the sense that when you look at those guys, Andy Reid coming from the Green Bay Packers, Doug Peterson coming from the Kansas City Chiefs, they weren't top candidates, right? Andy Reid was not seen as a top coaching candidate in the late 90s when Jeffrey Lurie hired him. Doug Peterson was seen as the worst coaching hire of the 2016 offseason. And they said, I mean, Michael Lombardi, we all know what he said about it, how Doug Peterson was the worst qualified coach in the NFL. Then he won a championship that same year. So Nick Sirianni, I don't think he was seen as that kind of candidate like Doug Peterson was. I thought he did have a lot of respect around the league, but like Andy Reid, like Doug Peterson, he was not a top candidate. The Philadelphia Eagles like to go for that kind of guy, that he might not be a top candidate now, but you might miss out on him if you don't hire him now, because in a year or two, he will be that guy. And again, like I said in segment one, it's also very similar, Sirianni, his personality to Andy Reid, to Doug Peterson. His ascension came through being open-minded, his strong ability to develop multiple positions, an offensive background. That is key too for the Eagles. They want your background to be offense. They want your background to be quarterback, passing the football. Much like Andy Reid and Doug Peterson, that is Nick Sirianni as well. As well as his player-friendly mentality. That's very important. Since Chip Kelly, they're not going to go back to that CEO-like mentality, like personality at head coach. And for me personally, those are the coaches. I remember when I played football back in, you know, middle school and high school, those were the kind of coaches, the Andy Reids, the Doug Petersons, the Nick Sirianni's, that I didn't want to let down, right? I shut down on the Chip Kelly kind of guys, right? The my way or the highways, the really tough love kind of guys. I mean, to me, you look at Doug Peterson, Andy Reid, Nick Sirianni, those guys, especially Doug and Sirianni, they played the game, right? Peterson was a quarterback at the NFL level. Nick Sirianni played multiple positions on both sides of the football, too. He's not just seen as some offensive coordinator as head coach. Both sides of the ball, both players on each side are going to respect him because he played receiver and he played corner. Players can relate to those kind of guys more, and they respect those kind of guys more. So it's a great question. I think Nick Sirianni does share the closest journey with, funny enough, that I think the two best coaches in Eagles history, Andy Reid and Doug Peterson. Let's take one more break. We'll get into some more questions on this mailbag edition of Locked On Eagles coming up next. Guys, today's show is sponsored by the best tasting protein bar on the market. It's Built Bar. Did you know that Built Bar has 9 delicious flavors? Coconut, coconut almond, cherry, raspberry, mint brownie. My go-to is peanut butter brownie. You also have double chocolate as well and salted caramel. So there's something for everybody, and there's only 130 calories in every bar, 17 grams of protein, and best of all, it's covered in 100% chocolate, and it's soft and it's easy to chew. Go to BuiltBar.com today and use our promo code LOCKED15, all capital letters, by the way, LOCKED15, and you're going to get 15% off your first order. Once again, that's promo code LOCKED15 for 15% off at BuiltBar.com. All right, Eagles fans, welcome back into this Friday edition of Locked On Eagles. Louis DiBiase joining you, wrapping up this week of shows. We're going to be back, though, even though it's the kind of the dead zone of the offseason, right after the draft, right? This is when the news kind of gets stale, but me and Gino don't stop. 5 episodes a week downloaded into your phone. So subscribe wherever you get your shows, Apple Podcasts, Google, Stitcher, Spotify, Odyssey, you name it. We are available on all platforms. Let's get into some more questions from you, the listeners, in our mailbag portion of the episode. And let's get into our good friend over at Fox 43, Cale Ahern. He asks, are you expecting the team to add a veteran cornerback or two between now and the regular season? I figure training camp cuts could create an opportunity to add someone currently not available. Cale, I think they have to. You have one quality cornerback in Darius Slay, and you have no idea if he's going to be a long-term piece after a year or two. And the other two that you have experienced, I mean, one's Michael Jacquet, who was an undrafted rookie last year who really didn't do much. And then it's Avante Maddox, who I don't want to rely on outside again, maybe in the slot. But even there, like, I'm okay if you try to add some more competition inside as well. Like, if you bring back Cravon LeBlanc, I'm cool with that. You have to do at least something like that, where you bring back a Cravon LeBlanc. I'm not saying you have to add your future CB1 this year. You're not going to do that. You could have did that in the draft, but you passed on Asante Samuel. You didn't get to J.C. Horn or Patrick Surtain in round one, and I didn't think you were going to take him anyway if you moved up. It was going to be for Devontae Smith. So you're going to have to do that in the 2022 draft. But you can still add, you know, you look at in 2017, they added Chris Long, LeGarrette Blount late after the draft, and those guys were key in a Super Bowl win. You could still do that at cornerback. If you're trying to add your CB2, or if you're just trying to add depth, which the Eagles need both really, really bad. So you could add somebody like Steven Nelson, formerly of the Pittsburgh Steelers, who the Eagles reportedly talked to. The issue is that 13 other teams did as well. So would Nelson, who's was one of the best CB2s in football the past couple years. Would he choose Philadelphia over a Super Bowl contender like the Buffalo Bills? I'm not so sure. But there's also guys like maybe somebody with a future payoff, a former first-round pick in Gerrion Conley, formerly of the Raiders and the Texans, out of Ohio State, first-round pick in 2017. You could do something like that. The only move that I think you could make now that could add maybe a potential CB1 is, I know Stephon Gilmore for a bit was available by the New England Patriots, but now I'm not so sure if you could even get Gilmore from New England, because I know they drafted Mac Jones in the first round, but you saw all the moves they made in the offseason, right? Paying Nelson Agholor, Kendrick Bourne, Jonnu Smith, Hunter Henry. I know these aren't crazy signings, but Bill Belichick spent more this offseason in guaranteed money than he ever has as the czar of Patriots football. So I think they're, and they ran it back with Cam Newton. They did bring back Cam Newton, so Mac Jones is not going to start in 2021. So I think they're in win now mode. So would they even give you Stephon Gilmore at this point? I don't even think so. So I'm not saying you're going to add your CB1. For right now, that's Darius Slay. But yeah, they're going to have to either add their CB2 through this free agent market or trade. And even if they can't do that, they got to add more than what they have, because right now it's Darius Slay, and then it's unfortunately Avante Maddox and really nothing else. So yeah, they're going to add a veteran cornerback or two for sure between now and September. All right, one more question to get into. At Jedi Mr. Fan asks, what wide receivers are going to make the roster? Also, if J.J. Arcega-Whiteside can't make the roster as a wide receiver, do you think he can make the move to tight end? Well, considering he can't really make moves on the line of scrimmage at receiver, and he has the lateral quickness of a dump truck, yeah, he'll probably have to play tight end, kind of like Kelvin Benjamin is right now, or Tim Tebow. That might be the best way for him to make the roster, but no, he's not big enough either, I don't think, to be a tight end. Here's my predictions for the Eagles, my early predictions for their wide receiver depth chart. I think it's going to be Devontae Smith and Jalen Reagor, and then I think it's a combination of the six that make the roster are Devontae, Reagor, Travis Fulgham, Quez Watkins, John Hightower, and Greg Ward. It's pretty much last year's core, except you remove DeSean Jackson and Alshon Jeffrey, and you add Devontae Smith. So that is my group, those four, or those six. And honestly, yeah, maybe, I don't think J.J. Arcega-Whiteside has any chance. I think Trayvon Grimes, your undrafted free agent out of Florida, could maybe beat out Greg Ward or Quez Watkins or John Hightower. I really doubt it, though, because those bottom guys, they showed a lot of upside in their rookie seasons. And Greg Ward himself, like, I don't want him to be your starting slot receiver, but if he's my wide receiver 5 or 6, the guy has shown he's very reliable when you need him in 2019 and in 2020. I mean, last year he caught 6 touchdowns, and in 2019 he made some of the biggest plays in a playoff run down the stretch to win the NFC East. So I don't want to get rid of Watkins or Hightower, and I don't really want to get rid of Greg Ward. I don't want to rely on Greg Ward, but I do want him on my depth chart. So I think that's the core six at receiver. J-Jaw, he doesn't make it. He hasn't done literally anything. It's crazy. In 2 years, it's kind of pathetic. Like, I can't believe they took him in the second round. And I know we always talk about this, and it's beating a dead horse on Eagles Twitter. And even though I didn't like it at the time either. The fact that they passed on DK Metcalf at the time I thought was ludicrous. I watched the film of J.J. at Stanford, and I just did not see anything special on tape. But I didn't see this either. The fact that he is this useless, where he has, what, 14 career catches? I mean, DK had more in a game and a half against Philadelphia. So the fact that he is this useless and this unproductive is crazy. I do not think there's any way, especially with a new regime, right? Nick Sirianni was not part of drafting JJ. I know that Jeffrey Lurie was kind of the mastermind behind that move, but I can't imagine that he's going to step in, or Howie Roseman, and say, Nick Sirianni, you have to have this kid in your wide receiver room. Roseman could do that. It wouldn't surprise me because it's Howie, but I can't imagine they would do that. Just compared to the other guys, you can see, like, the film doesn't lie. This kid cannot play. Maybe he can somewhere else. Maybe he needs a change of scenery like Nelson Agholor. But even Nelson Agholor, like, as bad as he was in 2015 and in 2016 he gets benched, right? And he was among the top of the league in drops those 2 years. He could never separate. He didn't look like anything like he was at USC when he was a first-round pick. But even Nelly those 2 years, like, he made plays. You know, like he made that incredible one-handed catch down the field against Washington in 2015, that big touchdown against Buffalo. He did have some explosive plays even in 2016, that week one against Cleveland, a deep touchdown from Carson Wentz along the right sidelines. Like, he did make some plays. JJ has made one notable play. And one that, okay, last year he recovered Miles Sanders' fumble in the end zone, but that doesn't even count, really. He made one notable play. It was Monday Night Football against New York in 2019. 5-7, right? The Eagles had to win to save the season. And he, that, you know, Wentz just threw it up one-on-one. JJ's falling away on the right sidelines, right? Makes a great play, falling down, big body. That was an impressive play in a must-win game. That was it. Every other time he had an opportunity to step up, and they haven't had great receivers, so he had every chance to take one of those spots. He did not take it. So, yeah, I think those are the receivers, and I do not think JJ is a part of that group. All right, guys, thanks for tuning in to this Friday edition of Locked On Eagles. Again, be sure to subscribe to the show for 5 episodes a week, and then I head right to Twitter. I'm going to do it right after this and talk birds with you guys at Locked On Birds and at DBLC. L-O-E. As always, thank you for downloading. Thank you for listening. Thanks for the questions, guys, as well. And let's go, Birds.